This is a very challenging parasha, especially the law which comes out in the very beginning. So let's start. And I do hope, you know, one can never tell, but I do hope that people realize that there is a moral difficulty or challenge within the very first law which is taught. And I want to try to do a couple of things today with it. Okay, so from the beginning, Ki teitzei l'milchama al oivecha, when you go to war against your enemy. So I guess that's a good thing, to go to war against your enemy as opposed to others. Unano Hashem Elokecha biyodecha v'shavita shivyo. And God puts them in your hand, you're victorious, and you capture captives. V'ra'ita b'shivya, and you see among the captives, eshet yifat toar. You see a beautiful woman. There, by the way, is some discussion in the Midrashim already. What if the beautiful woman is not beautiful? According to Beis Shammai, she's not beautiful. Does she still count as an Eishah Yifat Tohar if she's not beautiful? And the answer, by the way, in case you're wondering, is yes. V'lakachta l'cha l'isha, and you take her for a wife. And it goes through the whole process, what you do, and so on. And this is a very strange law. And this is not just me saying that this is a strange law. This is already the Gemara comes and says it. Rashi quotes the Gemara. Rashi tells us that this is a concession, keneged Yetzer Hara, it's a concession to the Yetzer Hara. And we've discussed this in the past, and this itself should be troubling. Why in this particular place does the Torah make a concession? Why not in other places make a concession? Why not decide that if you go to a baseball game, because I want to get back to concessions, and they're selling hot dogs, right? Why shouldn't the Torah make a concession? Okay, you can have two hot dogs. It's okay, it's not kosher. Okay, keneged Yetzer Hara. Which means, if we're already saying keneged Yetzer Hara, you know what, we'll take a vote. Each person, whatever their particular Yetzer Hara is, they'll get to tell us what they want absolution for. And it'd make Yom Kippur a little bit more streamlined. And, you know, we wouldn't have to deal with all of this guilt and just make concessions whenever we can. So I hope that you all appreciate that this is not a very simple point. So on the other hand, I'd always felt that keneged Yetzer Hara was not so much as a concession for the Yetzer Hara, but rather was a strategy against the Yetzer Hara, keneged Yetzer Hara, saying that sure, you can take her, except for one thing, she becomes your wife and she gets the credit card. And that should be work better than any cold shower ever worked. Maybe that's exactly the point. It's that we're saying we're afraid that someone's going to fail. You know, and when it comes to... See, let's go back for one more second, and then, as I said, I want to take a whole other direction. Most of morality that we have today, I'm saying as an individual, not as a people, most of the morality that we have as individuals, we learned between the ages of 2 and 5. Right. Don't hit and don't steal and don't kill. Right? These are the things that we learned. And now suddenly we go to war, all of the morals that you had, okay, they all got thrown away. And you go out to war, you're allowed to eat non-kosher when you go out to war, you're allowed to take things from other people, you're allowed to kill people. So now along the list of things that you normally don't do, see, my point then is that it could be that morally, war becomes a time which is very, very confusing, and boundaries of decency and a lack of decency seems to disappear, and maybe therefore the Torah is saying, okay, and if this boundary is going to fall as well, there's consequences. That's the keneged Yetzer Hara. And that's really what Chazal, and as I said, Rashi especially, tries to show. Sure, you can do this, but the next thing is you're going to have a ben sora mora. Now, if you get shocked, why would you have a ben sora mora afterwards? Then the person has two wives, one that he likes, one that he doesn't like. So why would he have ben sora mora? Because basically, you as the father is somebody who's displayed poor impulse control. You're marrying a woman, aren't we being very nice over here? You're pulling her by the hair, right, out of the battlefield. So over here you have a completely dysfunctional relationship, poor impulse control, and guess what? Is that good breeding ground for a child who will then become a rebellious child who himself has poor impulse control and acts on it just like his father acted on it? And that's going to be a child who is going to be dysfunctional in terms of his attitudes towards society just like his mother is, who is absolutely against the society that she lives in, which means the Torah seems to be over here really going down to what I would describe much more as keneged Yetzer Hara. Again, the best way of beating the Yetzer Hara is think of long-term consequences. Because the way the Yetzirah works is an investment in right now, immediate gratification versus long-term consequences. And that's really what Rashi is doing for us, saying, oh, if you have an Eshiva Torah, you're going to have a Ben Sar Mori. You have a Ben Sar Mori, you're going to end up having two wives. You're going to end up having Isha Ova, Isha Snua, and so on. And now what the Torah is saying, sure, you can marry her, but just wife, watch as your life spins out of control and you've completely have lost everything. So that's why I would prefer to understand what the Torah, what the Gemara is saying, Kineged Yetzirah, more so as a strategy against the Yetzirah, think of consequences. That seems to be what's going on. Good? Good. Now, Rashi says something in source number two, which should be obvious to all of us, despite the fact that I emphasized earlier that you go to war against your enemy. Rashi nonetheless says, Kitzeitzei l'milchama b'milchemet harashut hakatuv medaber. We're talking about a war which is, we're going to have a hard time with words right now. But there are different types of wars, and there's different opinions which types of wars exist. So just to get the lingo in terms of the Mishnah or the Gemara, you have what's more commonly known as Milchemet Rishut and Milchemet Mitzvah. There's a third, Rabbi Yehuda throws in a third category of Milchemet Chovah, and I'm not going to get into all the discussions now, but just be aware there is some dialogue there that is important. Let's define Milchemet Mitzvah as more of an existential war, and let's define Milchemet Rishut as more of an economic war. I'm not saying that these definitions are absolute definitions, but they're good definitions. So it's also, if somebody comes and attacks us in our land, that would not be Milchemet Rishut. And by the way, that may be why there could be three different categories. Because how do you deal with this other category? Is it a Chovah, Mitzvah, and Rishut? So that's why I said I'm just trying to make the categories as easy as I can right now. So again, if we decide as a people tomorrow, although Friday's, I don't know if it's a good time to start a war, but if we decide tomorrow that it may be a good idea to attack Saudi Arabia and get those oil reserves, right? It's not the craziest idea you know we've ever had. Could be their ours anyway, based on the promise to Avraham. We've discussed that. We've looked at the map. We know that it's ours. So if we decide to go to war, that is not a Milchemet Mitzvah, even though certain Jews may think that's a mitzvah, but that's not a Milchemet Mitzvah. That would be a Milchemet Rishut. Right? So over here, Rashi says this whole thing of a Eshiv HaTohar falls within the Milchemet Rishut. So I can also now say that, okay, Mr. Siegel mentioned before the concept of the Sheva Amamim. Okay, so let's just introduce those for a second. We have the seven nations. Seven nations are occupying the land of Israel. We want to take our land, which God has promised to us, to Avraham, and so on, to us over the generations. We are then told to go and take our land. So that is not a Milchemet Rishut. That would be an obligatory war. So this idea of the Eshiv HaTohar does not fit into that. So what I could then say is that by Milchemet Mitzvah, it's the enemy is more of an absolute enemy. When it comes to a Milchemet Rishut, the enemy is not as an absolute of enemy, because again, we're dealing more so with something which is more like economics. But there's something else which bothers me along the way, and of course, some of you over here will utilize this when you want to be demagogues. Let's take a look. In source number three, Reb Chaim Paltiel, those of you who do not remember who Reb Chaim Paltiel is, he's one of the Balei HaTosfot, he's a student of the Maharam Rutenberg. He writes, Samach Parshat Zu, L'chi Ta'aseh HaYashar Mipanai, Shelo Ayu Motzim L'Milchama Rak HaKsherim, that only people who were Ksherim, now what does that mean? Only people who were Ksherim can go out to war. So this goes back to what he's referring to is towards the end of last week's Parsha. Last week's parsha in source number four, Kitzeitzei l'milchama oleivecha. So notice it's like the exact same form. And again, over here, Rashi is going to tell us that this is by a milchemet rishut we're talking about, but we're not up to that yet. And over here it says you're going to see all of the power of the other side, the sus, the horses, and the rechev, and the chariots, and so on, all their power. What does it say? Here's a mitzvah. Lo tira mehem. Do not be afraid. Ki Hashem Elokecha imach, of course God is with you, HaMelcham Eretz Mitzrayim, took you out of Egypt. Right there, there's a very important mitzvah. If we are fighting, and we are Jews, and we're fighting, and we have God on our side, Therefore, the same way that God took us out of Egypt, God is going to support us in these battles. And if we're afraid, it means that we right away have a theological problem. If we are afraid, we have a problem. Now, what exactly is that fear going to be? So hold on for a second. But here it said, a mitzvah, you should not be afraid. Then along the way, we're told of various people who get dispensations, who are able to be freed from their army service. That goes into Pasuk. Hey, v'dibru ha-shotrim. In the very beginning of last week's parsha, we had the shoftim and the shotrim. Now we finally gave a speaking role to the shotrim. Shotrim speak and say, Ela am le'mor mi ha'isha she'bana bayit chadash. Who is the person who, A, built a new house? Pasuk vav, mi isha she'nata kerem. Who is the person who planted a vineyard? Pasuk zayin, mi isha she'eras ishan. Who is the person who has now gotten engaged or married? And then in Pasuk Chet, it says, by the way, just as a note, in that Pasuk continues, V'lo lecha, Pasuk Vav, V'umi ha'isha she'eras isha v'lo lecha, yilech v'yashov leveito, pen yamut b'milchama v'isha yer acher yikachena. Because maybe he'll die in battle and some other person will marry her. On this Pasuk, the Rambam cites this, when somebody asked him, a letter of the Rambam, questioned him about the concept of Bashert. And said, isn't it true that the Gemara says, 40 days before a person is born, God, this person's to this person, this person's to this person. So somebody basically asked the Rambam, so do you believe in Bashert? So he said, no. And he said, I'll tell you why. He goes, and cling to this rule. Listen, internalize, and keep this rule. You can't have a teaching of the rabbis going against a black and white verse in the Torah. Over here, it says that maybe you're going to be engaged and someone is going to marry. But if this is the Bashert, then what do you mean someone else is going to marry? That's not possible. The Rambam says, well, apparently that is possible, and that's why we're concerned, and that's why he comes back from battle. And the Rambam, because of this verse, says, take the concept of Bashert and please throw it away. Okay, continue. Yeah. Naomi means you may be stuck with the wrong person. You never know. But happy anniversary anyway. So, and then in Pasuk Chet, V'yispur shatrin l'daber la'am v'yum amir isha yareva rach levav, yeshuv ilech le'eto. Who's the person who's afraid? Let him go back. And over here we have, in the Mishnah, a two-way, in the Gemara, and the Abraita, a three-way argument about what does it mean that somebody who is afraid. So let's skip the Rashi. The only reason I like to bring the Rashis is because when... It's accessible. So just know that Rashi's right there, but I want to go over to the Mishnah and then the Gemara. The Mishnah in Source 6 says, Vayosfu ha-shotrim l'deber la'am, v'yomam y'isha yarach v'rach ha-levav, yelech v'yishuv v'yito, Rabbi Akiva omer ha-yarev v'rach ha-levav kimashma'o. It means somebody who is afraid. She'en yachol amod b'kishrei ha-milchama, l'rod cherev shlufa. Somebody who just doesn't have the fortitude to see battle and to see the drawn sword. Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer, Hayore Baharach Halevav, Zehamitere, Mina Averot Shabiyado. Somebody who's scared of the sins that he has committed. Now, I just want to build a case for Rabbi Yossi Haglili. How did this parsha begin, that section begin? Don't be afraid. I am with you. I support you. Which means to be afraid sounds very much like a theological failing. So if Yosei Aglili may very well be saying a very good pshat, and the difference between him and Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Akiva is reading exclusively that one verse where Rabbi Yosei Aglili seems to be reading the entire paragraph, and which then comes down to a question. So what is pshat? Is pshat based upon verse or larger context? But by the way, I think that that may very well not solve, but help understand arguments between various commentators when they tell you what pshat is, how broad you look at the context that you're trying to say what is the definition of this particular idea. Do you see the context as being that verse? Do you see that context as being that section? Do you see that context as being the entire Torah? And you will end up getting to different definitions depending on how broad you look at something contextually. So, over here we have the argument, literally afraid, versus somebody who's afraid of the sins that they may have. Rabbi Yossi Omer, I skipped a line or two. Almana l'kohen gadol grusha v'chalutza l'kohen hedyu, mamzer d'nitan l'Yisrael bat Yisrael l'mamzer, ulunatin harei zeyarei barach ha-levav. He gives us particular types of sins that this person had committed in order to be relieved of his obligation. And all of the ones that Rabbi Yossi really brings are ones of forbidden relationships and forbidden marriages, which is interesting. The Gemara then in source number 7 will continue and qualify first from the end of the Mishnah. B'medra mamurim b'milchemet harishut, aval b'milchemet mitzvah hakol yotzin. There's no dispensations for milchemet mitzvah. Afilu chatan mechadro v'kala michupata. Then everybody needs to be involved. By the way, even over here, those who are absolved from going to war, the Gemara pretty much says that they need to be involved in homeland security, including supplies and helping on other things towards the war effort. As far as the Gemara is concerned, even by Mechemer Ishut, there's no such thing as an absolute dispensation. It's just the question is, are you on the battlefield or are you not on the battlefield? And over here, but by a Mechemer Mitzvah, that's it. By the way, notice, even the men and even the
women.
And women. Okay, so we do not want to reveal any of these things to any religious leaders of modern times. That's what I'm saying. When you get involved in your demagoguery, you will be able to cite some of these things. Of course, it would seem to me that there at least is a possibility that when Israel is attacked and there's an existential threat, that may very well be a Mohammed mitzvah, and if indeed it is a Mohammed mitzvah, so then there is no such things as dispensations, and men and women and all should be trained, and so on. And I won't say any more, but I think that some of you may understand what I am very subtly... hinting at. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, "B'medrim b'mechemet mitzvah, avu mechemet chova hakol yotzim afilu chatam michedro v'kala michupata." And as I said, that's where one needs to look into the difference between mechemet mitzvah versus chova, and that is for your homework. Ma'ika bein Rabbi Yosef b'Yosi Aglili. The Gemara then asks, "Hold on. What exactly is the difference between Yosi and Yosi Aglili? Because both of them seem to be of the opinion that it's of the sins that you have." Ika b'naihu, what is between them? Aveira d'Rabbanan. Because he was talking about the Kohen Gadol. By the way, isn't that a little funny? Who can't go to war? Who's afraid? The Kohen Gadol who married a chalutz. Hold it. The Kohen Gadol is the one who's going out to war. Well, if it's a Mechametz Mitzvah, maybe. Maybe. Because that's, hold it, Mechametz Mitzvah, there's no dispensation. So I'm saying the whole thing is somewhat confusing. So then Gemara qualifies, come on, Azla Hadetanya. Who does it go like? It goes like this, Breita. Sach ben tfila l'tfila, aveir hi biyado, v'chozer l'mi orchei ha-milchama, kiman, kervios yaglili. Somebody who speaks between putting on their tfilin shel yad, Rashi 8, sach ben tfila l'tfila, ben hanachat tfilin shel yad, l'tfilin shel rosh. Sach, siper. Aveir hi biyado, im lo chazar uberech, tohach yaminu b'menachot, sach mevarech shtayim, lo sach mevarech echad. So there is, first of all, those of you, which may be half of you in the room who don't know this, there is some intrigue when putting on tefillin whether one makes one bracha or two brachot. What, I mean, may be connected to it, or is it tefillin shayad, tefillin shirosh, one mitzvah, two mitzvot? Do you say one bracha laniach tefillin or two brachot? Ashkenazim, many of them at least, have a very funny custom of saying in between, of saying Baruch Shem Kavod Malchut Tola Umved, just in case they said a bracha levatola. So we're saying, yeah, we know we shouldn't, but we're going to say this. But, and Sfaradim generally make one bracha. There's some Ashkenazim who do this as well. They should say Amen and then Baruch Shem Kavod Malchut Tola Umved. Okay, but there's a tension. The Rambam, if anyone's interested, deals with this question in Hilchot Tefillin, but he has different assumptions than Rashi. So let's just say it like this. Of all of the terrible sins that we have committed, so this is the one that it says, oh, this is what it's talking about, you go back for more. Now, this is not a very serious sin. If this is not a very serious sin, remember what Rav Chaim Paltiel said? That this is Mechemet Rishut, so who's going? Only Haksherim. What does it mean, only Haksherim? That who are the one, only the tzaddikim are going out to war. The people who talk between putting on the tefillin yad and tefillin sharosh. So what does that mean? What does that mean? The people who talk don't go out to war. The people who talk made a hefsek don't go out. So what does that mean? Who else doesn't go out to war? The ones who don't put on the tefillin don't go out to war. So if you want to get a dispensation from going out to war, according to this, if you don't put on tefillin, then that's it. You shouldn't be able, I mean, it's a kal v'chomer. You shouldn't have to go out to war. It's amusing already, right? So now who does go out to war? Only tzaddikim go out to war. So only tzaddikim go out to war. If you're not religious enough to go out to war, then I guess you should go to yeshiva to learn how to become religious. So therefore, that's it. only so if you're going to say it's a mechemet, I guess I'm being a demagogue to it now. They're the only ones that go out to war. Okay, that would be pretty scary also. That's it. So I'm just saying is that basically, olam hafuch matzati over here, that if we deal with Mechemet Mitzvah, then everybody needs to go. We deal with Mechemet Rishur, then only the tzaddikim can go. But 1 second, we're getting towards a question over here. So the tzaddikim who don't even talk between putting on their tefillin and shirosh, they're the ones who are going to see the hot shiksa, excuse me, and they're going to want to drag her and come home. Right? So now we're essentially completely, completely confused, because if we're talking about only the tzaddikim will go out to war, so why are these tzaddikim? And after this, I'm going to stop and we're going to... And this is true. There was a woman in Hebrew University who did a thesis by interviewing soldiers in the Israeli army and attitudes towards the female population that they had gone to war against and incidences of rape and so on. And according to the study, she found out that there was a lower incidence of rape in terms of Israelis versus the populations that they were dealing with than any other army in any other place. And her conclusion was that this indicates the racism of Israel because their women aren't even good enough for us to rape. That was the conclusion. And this was used by the BDS on campuses in America. Look how racist the Israeli army is. Stop so moral. We don't care that you're not raping. Why aren't you raping our people? And the upshot of the story, and this is true, the upshot, because I'm telling you this is true, you can research this, you can see this, the upshot of the story is her thesis advisor lost his job for raping some of his students. Why? Because he liked them. He respected them. So anyway, I only begin to know what else to say over here. I want to say something which I think may actually be true. So that's always scary. Of all the things to choose, somebody who speaks between putting on the tefillin and shiat tefillin shirosh. Now, what I'm about to say, I remember seeing in a book around 40 years ago. I looked around for the book online. I couldn't find it. I'm not only 45. It was written in the Lev Eliyahu by Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian. And from what I recall him saying, is on this point of the Sach ben Tefila L'Tefila, is that what the person then is doing is that he's creating a division between the Tefillin Shel Yad and the Tefillin Shel Rosh. Now, what is the Tefillin Yad? It represents the physical world. And what does the Rosh represent? It represents the intellect, or perhaps the more spiritual world. So the person who now has two different realms and two different worlds, that person can't go to war. Why can't that person go to war? Because to go to war means actually a unified worldview. Let me just point out something. In the last source that you have on the last page, the Rambam describes what it means to go to war. Mia ish hayarei v'harach halavav kimashma'o. So the first thing that Rambam does, he was like Rabbi Akiva, which should not be a surprise. L'choko Rabbi Akiva v'chavero. So we generally have a principle. We break it a lot, but we generally have a principle. It is halacha ko Rabbi Akiva. She'em b'libo koach lamod b'kishrei milchama. U'me'achu shikanes b'kishrei milchama yish'an al mikveh Yisrael. But once you go to war, what should you do? You should rely on Mikveh Yisrael. What is Mikveh Yisrael? The hope of Israel. This probably could be used in some Yom Kippur drashot, because the Mishnah at the end also talks about the Mikveh Yisrael. Umoshi'o be'et sarah v'yodeya sha'al yichud Hashem hu osim ilchama. And he knows the reason he goes to war is it is a holy war. That's where we go. V'yasim nafsho v'kapo, and you put your life, your very life, in God's hand. V'lo yarein, you shouldn't be afraid. V'lo yafached, not have fear. Be scared. V'lo yichshov lo b'ishto v'lo b'banav eli yimcha zichronam milibo. Wipe out all personal things from your heart. V'yifne mikol davar l'milchama. And anybody who starts to scare himself, starts having all kinds of thought, over below tase, he breaks the negative commandment, Shenemar, Al Yirach Levavchem, don't be scared, Al Tirov, Al Tichbazuv, Al Teretzubifneim, Velod Ela, Shakol, Demi Yisrael Tolun de Tzavarov, Imlo Natzach, Velo Asamil Machabacholibo, Bacholnafshar, Reze Kishofich de Mehakol. Anybody who's not willing to go to war is as if he's guilty of killing the masses. It's as if you're guilty of murder. Shenema v'lo yimas et levav yachav kilvavo. And certainly not to scare other people. V'imufurash b'kabbalah, arur oseh Melechet Hashem Ramiyah Barur Manocher Bo Midam V'kol An Yilcham B'kol Libo V'lo Pachar V'tiyeh Kavanato L'kadesh Et Hashem Bilvad V'vtach Lo Shelo Yimtza Nezek V'lo Titkir Ra'ah, and so on and so forth. Saying that going to war is putting your trust in God, it is religious experience. So again, I just want to say, this is talking about Mechamet Rishut. How do I know Mechamet Rishut? Because it's talking about the person who's afraid. So this is Mechamet Rishut. So Mechamet Rishut, again, literally, you're talking about tzaddikim. You thought I was kidding before. When you read the Rambam, you're talking about people who are tzaddikim, who are going out to war, the Israeli army, the guys and girls who go out, these people are tzaddikim and tzidkaniyot. They have their, what they're concerned about is the Jewish people and is God, the Jewish people representing God, and they're involved literally in doing melechet kodesh, in doing something which is holy. So now I just want to go back again and say, hold it. How does all this work now? But this is the person who's now going to go and see that Eshet Yifat Tohar. So just going back again, this unified worldview, the person who doesn't have the unified worldview can't go to war. You know, the other thing that this reminded me of, and if in fact I find the Lev Eliyahu and he actually brings this as his source, then I apologize for not doing my homework. But in source number 9, in Pirkei Avot, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hamahalech Bederech Vishone, somebody who's walking along the way and reviewing their learning, Vishone, Vimishne, they're going over their learning, Umavsik mi Mishnato, then he stops his learning, the omen says, Mana Ilan Ze, look how beautiful this tree is, Mana Na'ir Ze, look how beautiful this bush is, Maleh Katuk Ilamit Chayev Benafsha, this person is guilty as if, what was so bad? We're not supposed to appreciate the beautiful trees, the beautiful nature, beautiful things, but what did it say? He separated between the spiritual world and the physical world. And if this person didn't separate between the two, and but rather looked at the physical world and brought it within the spiritual world, that a world of Torah is a unified large world which needs mathematics and needs science and needs understanding of other things. But over here, I think this may well be the pshat of this Mishnah. It's the division. So Rav Kook said it, Rav Hirsch said it. I mean, we can go back. This is something which I believe is really a Torah true value. And the Sach ben Tefila leTefila, the Kedah Yitzchak already in a non-source, but hovering between 8 and 9, he tries to go in this direction. I don't like how far he went, but he did try to go in this direction, saying, why Sach ben Tefila leTefila? And he does go a bit to the physical and the spiritual world, but this seems to me to be correct. So this can lead us to that he sees a beautiful neshama. That may actually be far more true than we would have imagined. Sach ben Tefila leTefila means that somebody doesn't have a unified worldview. Somebody has a unified worldview, sees somebody who is beautiful, so that means they may see something, again, somebody who really is, in their mind, beautiful, but not just on the exterior, somebody who's beautiful as well on the inside. And the person with the unified worldview who went to war in the first place, that then creates completely different possibilities. Now, I want to go a couple of steps further over here, because something else is interesting, and that is that, you know, we would have thought in the very beginning, you go out to war, and just imagine war, certainly in the olden days, you got the drums beating, you got the war paint on, and it is hand-to-hand combat. And there's something very visceral about the battle, and there's something which is, the enemy is not some abstract idea even, you know, like you can shoot a tank, you know, from a very long distance. There's something which is very upfront and personal about the battle, and nonetheless, we're looking at this person as a potential mate, which is, again, completely, completely bizarre. This is not a college football game when you see a cheerleader of other team, and maybe I'll ask her out on a date, right? This is, and that may be dangerous, but this is not what's going on over here. This is somebody from the enemy lines. So I think if we begin to really consider what I'll call right now the Jewish war ethic, in terms of the way that it manifests in a number of ways. You go to war, don't surround them on all sides. Give them a way out. No scorched earth policy. Don't cut down all the trees, the fruit-bearing trees. It's not about total destruction, but the most surprising law is one which is found in source number 10, also from last week. Ki tekrav el ir lilachem aleha v'karata eleha shalom. Before you go to war, you make an attempt to create peace. Rashi, once again over here in source number 11, writes, Ki tukrav el ir b'machemer rishur ha-katuf medaber. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a war which is a non-obligatory war. You want to call it an economic war or something else. But so we go to Saudi Arabia and say, listen, we're taking over. If you're willing to accept, you know, our conditions and all, you'll be okay. Otherwise, that's it. So when you go to war, you try to make peace. The Ramban, in source number 12, says, he quotes Rashi, and he allows that Rashi actually has a source for this, the Sifri. That's pretty good. And then he says, yeah, but I disagree. The Ramban disagrees. If you didn't disagree, you wouldn't know it was the Ramban. We'll read source number 12. Skipping. Rashi took this from the Sifri. And says it black and white. It's talking about the non-obligatory war. Aval kriyat ha-shalom afilu b'mechemet mitzvah hi. The Ramban writes, we even reach out for peace in mechemet mitzvah, shechayivim l'kor l'shalom afilu l'sheva amamim. Even by the sheva amamim, the Ramban says, we should try and make an attempt for peace. Now that's nothing, because the Rambam goes even further. Of course, the Rambam went further before the Ramban wrote this, but the Rambam goes even further. Look at source 13, because you're not going to believe me that it says it, and even after you read it, you're going to tell me that it didn't really say it. And it says it, now he says say it, he says it twice. You ready? Halacha Aleph. This is the law of wars, Perek Vav. Halacha Hilchot Milachim. Ein osin milchama im adam ba'olam ad shakurim lo shalom. Echad milchamim rishut ve'achad milchamim mitzvah. You never go to war unless you first made an attempt for peace. Shenema ki tukar ve'lo iu de'lachem alev v'karat alev shalom. Im hishlimu. Now he gives us a definition of what peace is. And this is what's interesting in the Rambam. What does it mean, hishlimu, they made peace? V'kiblu sheva mitzvot shenitzdavu b'nei noach. To make peace is not just an economic issue, but they say, you know, we'll accept the seven mitzvot b'nei noach. Ein hargin mehem neshama v'herhi lamas. You do not kill any of them. And he quotes some verses around the way, and we'll skip to, and they have to accept Israel's dominion over the land, and so on. Halacha gimel, next paragraph. This is also something which is not popular in the Middle East. V'asur l'shaker b'vritam u'l'chazev lehem acha shehishlimu v'kiblu sheva mitzvot. If they accepted seven mitzvot, you're not allowed to break your word. Your word is a vow. Halacha dalet. Here's where it gets even more interesting. V'imlo hishlimu. So hishlimu we know has different components. Accepting peace, accepting Israel's dominion of the land, and accepting Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Vim lo yishlimu. O sheyishlimu v'lo kiblu Sheva Mitzvot, o simim alachamav, or yin kol hazachirim ha'gdolim. You go to war and you kill all the adult males, v'ozazim kom b'manan v'tapam, and you take your booty. V'ein hergin isha v'lo katan sh'nerev v'anashim v'taf, z'taf shel zachirim v'medver amurim. When is it that you act this way? V'mechemet reshut. Shehu im shar ha'umot, with all the other nations. Aval sheva ha'amamim v'amalek shelo yishlimu. But the seven nations and Amalek, which did not make peace with you. Hold it. What is Amalek doing here? Amalek shelo hishlimu. What do you say in the first paragraph? Whenever you go to war, you try to make peace. But sheva amamim v'amalek shelo hishlimu, ein manichem em neshama, then you kill them all. Shenemar kein taseh l'chol, rak me'ir amim lo techeh kol neshama, v'cheinu omer v'amalek timchad zecher amalek. U'minayin she'enu medaber elu be'elu shelo hishlimu. The war against Amalek is only after they refuse to make peace. What in the world is the Rambam talking about? Are you channeling your inner Rivard right now? Right? Saying, what are you talking about? The Rambam just now said it, and he said it twice, if you noticed. He did not need to bring Amalek into this. He could have said Amalek. They know Amalek's an exception. Amalek, we're wiping you out. So when I say that we have a much more nuanced attitude when it comes to going to war, that we're not dealing with absolute enemies, but Amalek is our enemy. Amalek wants to kill us. Amalek, and what do the Rambam just say? No, but we can make peace with them. See, there's a whole separate discussion, which I'm not going to get into right now. What if somebody from Amalek converted? Somebody from Amalek converted, they decided I want to become a Jew, they come and they convert and they become a Jew. So there is a whole discussion in the Mechilta and the Psikta, whether somebody from Amalek can convert, whether we accept them. So one can argue that you can't accept someone from Amalek, but let's say they converted. Let's say b'dieved they converted. Others say, no, you can. The Rambam, and I didn't bring this because it's more subtle, but the Rambam, when he discusses Conversion says you can't marry someone who's not Jewish, but once somebody converts, then you can marry. And then he brings in certain tribes where there are limitations. And Mitzri, how many generations? This, how many generations? He never brings in Amalek as an exception. The implication there is that somebody from Amalek converted, they converted, and that's it. So hold it a second. See, first of all, I can ask you, but please don't take this. Don't take this too much, but this you should contemplate during your Suda on Purim, when you're ready. You're ready, not at the beginning. If somebody from Amalek converts, do they have to kill themselves? On the one hand, there's a Jew, they're chayv mitzvot, they're obligated by mitzvot. On the other hand, they're Amalek, so they should have to kill themselves. Do they kill them? They commit suicide, did they perform a mitzvah? So you can't think about that today. What's really the answer? That when somebody converts, what do we say? That whoever converts, right, is like they're a brand new person. That's it. So if somebody from Amalek converts, they are no longer Amalek. What's the chiddush of the Rambam here? If somebody accepts sheva mitzvah b'nei Noach, they're no longer the person they were before. That accepting Shiva Mitzvah B'nei Noach is also a conversion. That's the point of the Rambam. That we're going to war against. You're the Sheva Amamim, but you made peace. So what happened? You made peace. You're no longer the Sheva Amamim. You made peace, now you're something else. What are you now? Now you're a B'nei Noach in good standing. Even if you are Amalek and we had an obligation of getting... Really, what's the Chiddush here? The Chiddush is that by doing this, you just now wiped out Amalek. That's the Chiddush. You just now wiped out Amalek. So I want to say a couple of things about this, and let's see how much time we really have to go with this. And just if you want to see something cute about this, so that if anybody has to say anything on Shabbos, so that maybe you could take this idea, but just look quickly at the Shlah, because I like the Shlah. Source 14, Kanelecha Chaver. What is Kanelecha Chaver? Acquire for yourselves a friend. If somebody is bad, again, lack of consistency, the inside and the outside, as chaver, charev, the same letters, then somebody who is a friend becomes like a sword. Ish bereihu bar mina, barach mimenu, by the same letters, run away from him. Vimutov bo, bachar Hashem, right? Somebody who chooses God. Chaver hu alecha, rachav di bero imo. So you can go over that again, but he just played a game with the same three letters and multiple applications of that letter. But remember, what did Amalek do? They came and attacked us with the sword. What else did they do? Let's read source 15. Zachar eight asher asalacha Amalek b'derech b'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim. I do want to just make sure you get this point clearly. If we're making peace before we go to war, and we see the possibilities of peace, and we believe in the possibilities of peace, it's very difficult then to have that same focus on your enemies being your enemies, which means it's not your enemies. It's either you're involved in a godly battle, and they are enemies against God, or they're not. So if they accept Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, they're no longer against God. What I'm saying is that it's possible that this whole mindset of trying to create peace actually may lay down the foundation for the possibility for the Eshet Yifat Torah to come afterwards. Because it's not absolute enemies. It's somebody who's currently has not accepted our system yet. So therefore, a microcosm of going out to war and converting them to the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach would be going out to war and seeing her and then bringing her in to accepting the mitzvot. By the way, I'm going to say it again. I don't think this is the best plan in order to create a really healthy Bayit Ne'eman v'Yisrael, but I just want to show at least the mindset of where it could come from. So now let's go to the end of the parasha Amalek, and now we're completely shocked, because now we found out that Amalek we're allowed to make peace with. I'm sorry to disappoint all of my fascist friends here, who were ready to go out and spill blood. Zachar et asher asalacha Amalek b'derech b'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you. Asher karcha b'derech v'yizanev b'cho kol ha-nechashalim. Now that's a very strange, v'yizanev b'cho kol ha-nechashalim. The word nechashalim, from the word chalash perhaps, v'yizanev, they got the weak part into the end, the weak part of the camp, the appendage. Rashi brings a bizarre commentary for the Medrash, I believe it's Medrash Tanchuma. But if it goes back to the theological war, v'yizanev b'cha, which means an appendage literally, a tail, an appendage, makat zanav, they hit them by the zanav, chotech milot v'zorek klapei mala, they cut off the brit milah, and they threw it up to heaven, saying to God, here, we don't want anything to do with anything spiritual. V'lo yira Elohim, they did not fear God. Lo yira Amalek Elohim. So what is this war? This war is a war against God, and Amalek doesn't accept God, and Amalek doesn't accept spirituality? Of course, I now have to just throw out that question of what happens if a malik wants to convert and wants to have a brit milah and wants to accept sheva mitzvot or wants to accept tarjag mitzvot. So now what happened? Are they still a malik or not? That's exactly what ends up coming out of this. The other thing is, if we'll skip to source 19, then maybe we'll come back. In source 19, it says, it's a book called the Brit Shalom. Brit Shalom is written approximately 1550 or so. So this is not that recent. He's dealing with the halacha that what did they do with the part that they cut off for the Brit Milah? Don't say it. So it says that you put it in the ground. Uvitur Yerodea, Katav Noagin Lahashlicha Orla, Meyatinok Shino Ba'afar. And they stick it in the afar. So see, he says, take a look what the Zohar says. Al shem v'nachash afar lachmo. Because the serpent eats from dust. Be prepared for total Freudian phallic symbol coming up over here. Long before Freud. Hakavana b'zeh, d'lefi ma shenit pa'er la'el da ha'nachash yesh lo achiza b'gida nashet gviya, ratza lomar ha'orla, v'yizanev b'cha kol ha'necheshalim otiyot nachash Mila. And here is one of many sources that read the word Necheshalim and make believe it says Nachash. Ki amaleku esav koach samael v'hanachash v'kal lahavim. Because basically this goes back to our theory of conservation of characters. We got the good guys and the bad guys. The bad guys start with the Nachash. It goes on to Esav. It morphs into Amalek. These are our bad guys. So this is Amalek against the Brit Milah. This is Amalek. This is the Nachash. It's all the same. Now go back to source 17. Reish Lakish says, Hu Satan, Hu Yetzahara, Hu Malach HaMavet. It's all the same. Basically saying there's one negative power in the world, and that's the Satan, and that's the Yetzahara, and that's the Malach HaMavet. The Radak, when he quotes this, writes in source 18, "V'hu yetzarah, v'hu hanachash, v'hu ha-satan." Right? He just threw in the nachash as well, because of course the nachash is the satan. How do I know the nachash is the satan? Well, when you act like the satan, then of course you're the satan. Now, look at source number 20. V'nachash haya aru mikol chayat ha-sadeh, asher asa Hashem Elokim, v'yomer Elisha. Now, according to Rashi and according to the Midrashim, the background of this story is the story of Eshet Yifat Tohar. It's the story of Eshet Yifat Tohar. Who is the one who sees the beautiful woman and wants the beautiful woman? The Nachash. By the way, that puts us in really bad company. I just want to point that out. That according to the way they see the story is, Adam and Eve are married, but the Nachash sees Adam and Eve, and the Nachash says that he wants to break them up and he wants to try to win over Eve. That is the Midrash, and I'm not going into that more than necessary right now. But I want you to note something, and I think this is, go back to 20. The Nachash is very sly. Vayomer ela isha ki amar elokim lo tochal mikol etzagan. Vatoma isha le Nachash. Yipri etzagan nochel. Uimpri etz asher betoch agan. Amar elokim lo tochlu mimenu lo togubo pen temutu. And Eve correctly knows that if we eat from this tree, we will die. She added in, if we touch it, and that perhaps came from Adam, and maybe Adam made a siyag to the Torah. He added the first din d'rabbanan, and we see how that worked out. It's the whole discussion of this in Avot Rabbi Natan in the beginning. Maybe the problem was not by adding or putting a fence around the Torah, but by doing it without telling her. You can't claim that something which is a d'rabbanan is really a d'oraita. Pasuk Dalet. Vayoma nachash isha, lo mot tamut, and you're not going to die. You will become like God, knowing tov v'ra. Now, what happens when they eat from the tree? Death comes to the world. He says you're going to be like God. Now, I'm going to say something. Based upon Tfilat Chana, which is in Source 22, Vatitpalel Chana Vatomar, and then skipping a little bit in her speech, we say this all the time, Hashem Mimit Umachayeh. God is the one who kills, and God is the one who gives life. To kill or to give life is something which is godly. I would say that part of the moral problem of war generally is, who gave us the right to take another life? By taking another, giving life or taking life is God's realm, is not our realm. We don't do this. Now it may be, I'm just saying this as a theory, it may be that the the Nachash just put unbelievable spin on this. She said, if we eat this, we're going to die. And he is saying, oh, don't think of it as dying. Think of it as, if you eat this, you're going to be like God. You're going to bring death. You're going to bring death. That's something only God does, is bring death or bring life. You will be like God now. Which means he's not arguing in terms of substance. This is total presentation. You will become godly by your ability now to kill, which means go to war. By the way, this is at least this is Nietzsche. This is the Havamina of Dostoevsky in Crime and Punishment. This is the Havamina. Oh, if you want to prove your godliness, your Übermenschlichkeit, then you go and you take another life. That just proves you are more godly. Be able to take a life is the ultimate proof of your superiority, and so on. And that argument may go all the way back to the Nachash. No. Don't think of it as bringing death. You're going to be like God right now, which is a very scary thing, especially because we know that my whole starting point in all this is the whole idea of going out to war. But what I want you to notice is the next verse. Pasuk Vav. And I want you to tell me if you recognize this verse. It's 20, source 20, Pasuk Vav. Vatera ha'isha, the woman sees, ki tova eats the machal, it's good to eat, v'chitavehu leinayim, and it's
attractive to the eye,
v'nechmada eats the haskil, and it's good to learn by, v'tikach min pever v'tochal, and she takes from its fruit and eats. Do you recognize that verse? Where? Eishes v'torah. It's the exact same verse. It's the exact same verse. Right. When we looked at our verse, v'ra'ita b'shivya, in our first verse, you see the shivya. That's why I bolded those words. V'chashakta ba, you desire to v'lakachta v'alisha. The exact same, I'm going to say precisely, but the same message is coming across between the Eishes v'torah and what's taking place over here in terms of the sin in Eden. And by the way, I do need to point out, again, we're on the side of the Nachash and we're on the side of sin, and all of this should paint this in a way which is not necessarily the most positive way. So now I want to go back and try it one more time. Source 26 is a source which, the truth is, I saw it many years ago, but I never had the guts to teach it. So it's the Orach Chaim on the Eishes v'torah. And he says some of the things that we've been saying today, but I felt we needed to build up to this. And in order to try to explain these verses, we need to explain something. Why in the world of the Torah give a commandment which allows a person to desecrate themselves with a non-Jewish woman? And certainly during the time of miracle, going out to war is, now we understand, is a spiritual experience to ruin this. It's a time that you should have more purity and more connection to God. Why in the world is the Torah allowed to do something? Oh, now you can marry somebody not Jewish. This is absurd. And this will cause somebody to come further away from God. Regarding eating non-kosher food during the war, we see, and he goes into a little discussion of that, skipping a little bit, this is something which God detests. And the rabbis in the Gemara admit that this is against the Yetzahara. And certainly during this time of going to battle, we should throw far away from our minds ideas of sex and marriage and relationships. Remember the Rambam said, even your own wife you should push away from your mind and focus on the battle over here. Now I'm checking out this woman. What's going on? Achein yisod hadavar v'sodo, and you know now he's going totally Kabbalistic on you. Hu el pi divrei himzal, which is based upon that which is said in the Zohar. Sha'amu shebechet adam harishon nishbu kama nishamot yikarot biyad sitra achra, that by the sin of Adam and Eve together there with the Nachash, some precious souls were won over by the other side, the Heim Nishamot HaGerim, and they're the souls of the eventual converts. That there's some very holy souls which have been which are deep undercover on the other side, and we need to bring them back. Which means he really is saying what you threw out before. You look and you see a beautiful soul, and you have an integrated worldview. You don't separate between the Tefillin Shel Yad and the Tefillin Shel Rosh, and you see this beautiful soul, which we now realize was lost during the sin, which is completely parallel in terms of its description, you need to now bring those souls back. So now I want to point out the ultimate irony, and that if you're not familiar with. Source 24. Batimna haita pilegesha Eliphaz ben Esav, vatel Eliphaz et Amalek. So where did Amalek come from? Amalek comes from, he is the son of Eliphaz, the grandson of Esav, and he's the son of a Pilegesh. But there's something interesting here about this is the Pilegesh of Eliphaz. The Gemara in Source 25 says, Mihak, v'chot lotan Timna mayhi. What does that mean? Timna bat malachim havai. Timna was from royalty. Dichtiv, aluf laton, aluf Timna. They call aluf malchuta below tagahi. Anytime it says aluf, it's talking about a ruler without a crown. Bayala igure, she wanted to convert. Just in case you're shocked about this, the Gemara says that Timna wanted to convert. Bata etzel Avraham, Yitzchak v'Yaakov, she came to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, she came to the Beis Din of the Gedol Hador in that generation, and she said, I want to convert. V'lo kibluah, they would not accept her. Holcha v'hoita pilegesh Eliphaz bat ben Esav, so she went then and became a pilegesh for Eliphaz. Amra, mutav t'yashivcha l'umazu, it's better for me to be even a woman of lacking status within this nation, velotia gviralu macheret, and not to be royalty in a different place. Nafak mina Amalek. From her, Amalek came. Did tsarin hul Yisrael, who caused incredible pain to the Jewish people. My taima, the Gemara has the audacity to ask, and why did this happen? Delo iboyelohu lerchaka. They should never have pushed her away. Which means when I go back and I say that the way that we can do Michiat Amalek is to take away all the poison of the serpent and all the poison of the Nachash, all the poison and the venom, and the way that you take it away and all the anti-God, going all the way back from the Nachash and through to Amalek, and the way that you do Michiat Amalek, at least one way that you do Michiat Amalek, is that you turn them into someone who accepts the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach. You turn them into somebody who accepts the Torah. At that point, they no longer are Amalek, because the story of conversion about Amalek is not some kind of a side point as far as the Gemara is concerned. That's the very starting point as far as the, and not just the starting point, that's the reason. Again, that's the Gemara. That wasn't me, that wasn't any kind of, it's not me bringing a commentary you never heard of before. That's the Gemara giving that interpretation, which therefore I think really leads us to this point in terms of a whole different type of Mechiyat Amalek. What I really want to take away from all of this is going back to what I said from the beginning. Our attitudes towards war, I think, are somewhat surprising. It's not a question of seeing the enemy as the evil and we need to wipe out the enemy. If even Amalek is not seen in absolute terms, so now all bets are off. And now all the other things we saw about wars, admittedly most of them in Mechemet Rishut, but all the things we saw about war in terms of giving them a way out, and in terms of not destroying the trees, and in terms of attempting to make peace, as the Rambam and the Ramban stress, even by the existential wars, even when it comes to Amalek, we attempt to make peace, and we give them an opportunity of not only converting, that's the second point, we give them the opportunity of accepting Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, and that's the incredible teaching over here, and I think that's what we have to say, that just like when someone converts, they became someone new. When somebody accepts the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, they become somebody new. And then it's this crazy Orach Chaim that I brought there at the end, that from the very beginning, there are these precious lost souls that we need to bring back in, and that's the beautiful soul, and that's what this person sees, and the person with the unified vision sees these beautiful souls, so suddenly this whole thing just takes on a completely different complexion.